Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her website's jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. Welcome back to the show, Danielle.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Danielle, Chinese property market in turmoil, and here in Canada, the commercial real estate market not looking all that hot. What's this? What are the stories there?
Well, it's the same story pretty much worldwide, Jim. It's the higher rate environment that we've been in since March of 2022 as they started tightening all around the world, and the bubble price and valuations that we went into it with, the record levels of debt that were ubiquitous pretty much after a decade of zero rates and all kinds of aggressive speculating and that sort of thing. So the same thing has happened all over the world. Prices became very inflated, and then now we've got the highest interest rates that we've seen since about 2007, and together those things have concocted unaffordable prices, unaffordable homes, whether it's rents, whether it's to buy, pretty much all over the place. And the people who were buying these properties thinking that they were investing are figuring out pretty quickly that if it's a negative carry situation where you're not making enough income from the property to cover the payments, and you're not able to pay enough on the debt to actually cover the interest, never mind pay down the principal, and suddenly prices are not going up, well, all of a sudden you have a unattainable situation entirely where people realize that they have to start selling. So there's a reason that these cycles take a number of years to play out. And the reason, certainly in the last year, why we haven't seen as many properties come to market and why we've had a shortage of listings in a lot of areas is that the first phase of it is where people kind of freeze like deer in the headlights and say, I want the price that I could have sold at a year ago, or that my neighbor sold that, 15 months ago. I want that price. Well, that price doesn't exist now. And so people are either, trying to not, just trying to tough it out in the hopes that prices will come back to where they were. And a lot have been, of course, just adding to the principal where they had any room. The latest data on the Canadian mortgage market is that nearly half of mortgages now have amortizations greater than 25 years, Jim. That was about 30% pre-pandemic. So the reason there is that all these variable rate mortgages, about half of the mortgages were variable rate at the start of this hiking cycle in 2022. And, a great many of them had fixed payments. So as the interest rate, went up dramatically, more than tripled, what happened was people were continuing to pay the same flat payment, and a lesser and lesser portion was going towards principal. And in the last several months, nothing has been going towards principal, and even not even covering sufficiently the interest rate expense. So we see this compounding, ballooning effect in consumer household debt. It's also been the case in corporate debt. And this, don't forget, while we've had deferrals of things like, for example, in the United States, there's about $1.7 trillion of student debt, which has actually been on a payment holiday for the last 3 years and is supposed to start being paid back again in late June. So you've just got a world of extend and pretend where a lot of people have been adding to debt and, trying to stay afloat. And then if realty prices don't bounce back and allow them to sort of, you know, refi and add that back to their fixed rate mortgages or that sort of thing, they are not able to keep their heads above water. And so you start to see, this happens in the corporate sector as well, which is commercial property. Of course, you know, part of that is the 25% of commercial property in some of the major cities like New York are presently empty. Because of the shift to hybrid work models, because of the, you know, work from home stuff that has persisted after the pandemic, because a lot of sectors are in a downsize mode, they became overly bloated and large in the prior period where rates were zero and everyone was, you know, throwing money around. Now the opposite is true. So there's a lot of empty properties, and for a long time, the investor community or the development community was just, you know, not doing anything, hoping it would come back, hoping they'd be able to sublet, hoping they'd be able to somehow roll over the debt. Well, that's not happening because rates have become untenable and also because lending has just evaporated, right? With the liquidity that's been coming out of the banking sector, both through the quantitative tapering that central banks have been doing around the world, but also just the tightening of credit standards worldwide. We've seen in all the senior loans officer surveys that there is a dramatic reduction in the amount of loans being offered. So you've got a whole bunch of people that are learning the hard way that, you know, lots of debt is not a good thing when you get into a tightening cycle or a downturn in revenue. And so some of the data is really quite astounding. You know, just for example, even in the Canadian household data, the latest Hoyes-Nicolaus study showed that you've had this big jump of greater than 36% year over year in Canadian-wide volumes for insolvency filings of consumers in Canada. And they are saying that that's really, you know, that was in a decline for a period of years while all of the free money was being handed out. But now they're seeing a jump even in the home builder, the homeowners bankruptcy index is up significantly. So that's, again, you know, typically people that own homes are the least likely or the last group that starts filing for insolvency, restructuring, or bankruptcy. But at some point that they get there when they can't keep up with the payments. So we're starting to see a default cycle, a big jump in auto loan delinquencies and defaults, in credit card delinquencies. You know, credit card debt is at the highest level. There's over $1 trillion of credit card debt outstanding in the United States. The average balance being carried is more than $5,700, and the interest rates are more, almost 30%. So just, you know, think about how impossible it is to get out of the hole when you've got that kind of credit outstanding and that kind of negative amortization happening. And then again, with the investor class, what happens is they again, you know, try and access credit, access, you know, greater fools to give them money. But that's not been working now for a considerable period of time. And so a bunch of them have just started not paying their loans. And some of these are, you know, the largest investors in the space have just been letting their mortgages go into delinquency. And then now the next phase of that has arrived where they're finally admitting that they are not going to be able to get back the money they've invested in these properties. And they're now the interest becomes, how do we get rid of them? Like, how do we download? And so in the first quarter of 23, investors actually purchased 68% less properties than they did in the same year in 2022. And the ones that are for sale and actually being bought in places like San Francisco and other major cities, we're seeing remarkable things like markdowns of 50 to 80%. 50 to 80%, Jim. People are, these investment companies are selling those properties in liquidation style just to get the negative carry off their books, right? Because it's literally burning money as they're trying to maintain the property. So that's fueling through to the private equity space. That's into the home office space. That's into the, you know, all the REITs and mortgage funds. This has just been a massive infusion of money into this space, which has driven huge over capacity and inventory levels, which are now starting to come on the market. So that's really worldwide. It's a long answer, but it's very connected.
Now, what can we do with this vacant
space in downtowns? Is it convertible to condos? Would people live in cities that have essentially become rotten in the core?
Well, transitioning, I was actually just doing some research on this. Transitioning office and commercial space to condo or residential space is actually a lot more difficult than you may think. Of course, there is, you know, a lot of plumbing and complete refurbishment that's required, but there's also pricing issues because commercial and office space have, you know, a price per the lobby and all the common areas, whereas typically condo buildings, people just pay for the unit themselves. So there's a lot of problems with transitioning this space, but ultimately we always do find a way in a capitalist society to reuse things that have been misallocated. Now, whether that is, you know, a question of gutting a structure and just using the outside and completely redoing the inside, or whether it's a case of tearing down completely and starting fresh, you know, those are definitely questions yet to be answered, and I'm sure it'll be case by case, region by region, area by area, but there's certainly a need. You know, there's a lot of talk about the fact in Canada, there's been a lot of people talking about, you know, the fact that we've had the record immigration the past few years as being the reason why, you know, properties have become so unaffordable, but actually that's not the case, because what's happened is if you look at the actual household incomes of the average immigrant family per household, it's $35,000 of income per capita. Or if you have two household, you know, both making the average income a $70,000 annual income, that's actually lower than non-immigrant households, and neither of those amounts is sufficient to, for example, the average home price in Canada and the latest data was over $700,000. Well, that kind of income, $70,000 even, household income, can only afford homes in the $350,000 range. So there's very, very, very few places in Canada that have anything available in that range in terms of housing. And when you look at the rents, the average immigrant family, again, with the household and trying to pay rent as well as eat and other essentials, can pay about $1,700 a month of rent. And again, the average rent is significantly more than $2,000 per month. So it's not a function of them having all this money and being able to drive up the prices. It's a function of, you know, asset prices and investors trying to increase the rents to now catch up with the fact that they paid too much for the building and that the interest costs have gone up so significantly. So it's a function of all this inventory sitting, being misallocated to the wrong, like a lot of empty properties, a lot of secondary or recreation or so-called rental properties that are actually sitting empty and have been for some time. So we do have a definite mismatch between where the demand is and what the affordability factor is and what the supply on the market or the supply that could come on the market is being priced at. So until those two things reconcile, you know, I really don't think it's a supply in the sense of a physical supply issue so much as it is there's not enough properties yet coming onto the market for this clearing event. But we are definitely seeing it happen, and we can definitely reuse some of that space or refurbish and redesign, because we want to reinvigorate the downtowns of cities. You know, we have a lot of dead patches in different resident in different cities with respect to whether it's the opioid crisis that has created a great homelessness in certain sections, and it's also just, you know, as I say, empty buildings, which is not good for any kind of local commerce. It's not good for the tax base. We're seeing a lot of municipalities dramatically increase property taxes right now. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has to do with the latent effect, you know, of a price where property prices leapt more than 50% in the 2 years during the pandemic. Well, it takes a while again for those reassessments on the property tax side to really hit, because they're backward looking in terms of values. But when you start to see properties changing hands, they get re-rated at this much higher rate, and suddenly property taxes are also escalating greatly. So it's very difficult for households or corporations to adjust quickly to the increase in property taxes, but if they're not being paid, if you've got a bunch of empty properties, a bunch of homes in foreclosure, it's also going to hit hard on municipal and regional property taxes. So that is a problem for governments, of course, and funding. So this is really all connected. This is why we really do need a good old-fashioned clearing event here, and I think that that's coming because we're already 13 months into the leading economic indicators being a negative for 13 months consecutively. That has always been consistent with a recession in the past. The average time between the first rate hike and a recession has typically been 15 months, and we're coming into the 15th month since they began hiking. This cycle will be the 15th month. So we just have so many indications now, whether it's in ISM manufacturing and going negative, whether it's in the JOLTS data where layoffs are now 40% higher over the past 3 months. Consumer buying conditions are the worst since 1980. We've just got all of these really lightning rod indicators that the economy around the world is going into recession, and that is going to be the catalyst for the clearing that needs to happen.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, an interesting article on your blog. A study finds financial influencers who were the loudest and least experienced were the most followed. What I call the yell and sellers. Yell and sell.
Yeah, well, this goes back to a problem that humans have where they like the most people that speak with the greatest certainty and confidence often attract the most followers or believers, and that traditionally has been a big problem, and it continues to be with the internet and social media and things, because the platform, you know, it's very easy for anybody to grab a camera or a mic and just publish their thoughts, and all of a sudden people are influenced and follow, but there's very little connection between often what they're saying and the certainty with which they're expressing those thoughts and the accuracy or the utility of what they're telling people. Because often, you know, I've discovered this through the last 25 years of my career, often the honest, most helpful answers are not that palatable to people. They like to hear, you know, magical things. They like to hear that, you know, they can do this one magic trick and it's going to solve all the issues. You know, telling them that things are much more nuanced or require thought, discipline, you know, constant effort, those things are not that interesting to most people. So that's why, you know, they can become their worst possible enemy. But, you know, again, it's not that hard. It's a function of looking at the data, looking at cycles, referencing historical precedent. All those things are much more illuminating than somebody, you know, telling you about how to get rich quick and what the next hot tip and all that stuff. But, you know, if you look at where we are right now, despite the fact that the average investment portfolio is down 27% from the peak in 2021, Jim, so 27%, and still we have almost 50% bullish attitude or sentiment expressed in the investor surveys, which is high. And also we have an expectation for earnings growth still to go forward, despite the fact that in recessions the average decline is 20%. You also have, you know, more than 60% allocated to equities still in the average portfolio. The S&P today, the S&P 500 is 14% presently comprised of just two stocks, Apple and Microsoft, 14% being the highest concentration ever in history of any two companies in the index. And every other time that you've ever had anything close to that concentration, it's been a cycle peak, and those companies have underperformed for years thereafter because they go from this manic adoration phase to, you know, finally liquidation, selling down, becoming more reasonable in valuation, and that's when everyone's dumping them all the way down. So today we have the S&P at the same level, thanks to the eight companies, basically, at eight tech stocks have rebounded an incredible amount just in the past 5 months. And those have taken the S&P index up about 8%. The whole thing has been dependent on these eight companies. Meanwhile, the broad-based index, you know, the S&P 600 is actually negative year to date, and the Russell 2000 is negative 29 from its peak in November of 21. So, you know, we've got the S&P today back where it was in February of 22 before they started the hiking cycle, Jim. So before they increased base rates 500 basis points and back when earnings per share estimates were 10% higher than they are today, the S&P was at the same level. So that just tells you that we've had a rebound in optimism, and it's, you know, they always pick a ridiculous reason. Like recently it's been, because they believe that there's going to be a resolution to the U.S. debt ceiling. Well, there's always a resolution to the U.S. debt ceiling. That's really neither here nor there. The longer term trend of the fact that debt continues to escalate by trillions of dollars year over year, that's a longer term issue. But in terms of a short term issue for the stock market, that's just a red herring because they are going to come to some kind of a resolution. That's not the reason that things started selling off. The overall climate, the fact that, you know, China's growth is the reopening trade is over and China's manufacturing and output is significantly lower. Things like Home Depot and Target are all warning that their sales are coming in lower. The commodities index, the CRB index, is 25% from the peak in February of 22. So there's a sector where, you know, the commodities index is seeing the demand dropping off in industrial metals that goes with manufacturing. Copper's at a fresh 6-month low. The yield curve has been inverted since last July, and a 12-month inversion period has always been, again, leading into recessions. Just even credit, like even the junkiest credit out there, the corporate debt stuff that is sketchy, and, you know, they're either going to have to, go bankrupt or restructure their debt because they can't keep up the payments. That spread between the high yield paper and the treasuries, which is the least risk debt, it should be about 825 basis points, just over 8% interest differential between the lowest risk government bonds and the highest risk corporate debt. And today it's only about 4.7% difference, so 470 basis points. So again, that just tells you that we're not through this credit repricing cycle yet. Optimism remains too high. But there, you know, we're making progress. We've been grinding down now since 2021, and the assets that have not yet gone into liquidation still very likely will. So you just have to keep your wits about you and not get swept up in the craziness of the crowd and keep an eye on the things that actually matter. And, you know, cash balances have to come up much further. The people sitting with cash today are being paid well for it, but the rest of the people that haven't sold enough are going to be in a desperation for cash for the next probably 6 to 12 months. And in that period, they'll be selling assets. And after they do that, that's when the real opportunity comes for those that have cash at the ready to step in and pick up things. And all kinds of assets will then be on sale all at the same time. So that will be an exciting thing.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Counsel Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.